we will get to that Bible passage eventually. And normally, my normal pattern doing talks, most series are Bible talks where I'm looking pretty closely at the text of the Bible. This series is going to be a little bit different, but I'll talk about that in a moment. But I want to introduce you to a few people, and they're going to come up on the screen. I think we've got some slides there and some photos in a couple on the screen. I'll start talking about the first person, and then she'll appear. Her name's Wendy, and now there she is. She's on the right. So the photo on the left, she's the person on the right. That's taken from WinterCon, which is a conference we have in July. And she's in the other photo too. And now she graduated at the end of 2017 as a nurse. Then she moved to Alice Springs, where she works in palliative care. The hospital there, and so palliative care is caring for people who are dying, and it's emotionally exhausting work, but Wendy loves it. She loves that she gets to spend time with people at that critical point, that juncture as they're facing death. And Alice Springs is different to Newcastle, and most of her patients are, or at least more than half of her patients are Aboriginal people, Indigenous Australians. And she's found one of the things she loves is that they're more open to talking about spirituality than, say, white middle-class Australians. And so she gets lots of opportunities in the hospital as people are facing their own death to talk with them about their spiritual beliefs and about God. Let me introduce you to someone else. That's taken from a men's event we had a few years ago. And the guy on the right in the foreground, his name's Stuart. He started uni in 2007 and he only finally left a couple of years ago. He started studying communications and then he switched over to arts. And in the midst there, he wasn't a Christian when he arrived at school, but he became a Christian. He'd been reading the Bible, he'd been coming along to talks and something, he became a Christian. And then he did an arts honours year, which took him 3 years. It was in modern history and politics. And then he realised that he can't get a job from doing arts, so he studied a master's in education. And while he was doing his master's in education, or maybe it was just before, he started a tutoring business called student-to-student tutoring. And I used to love, like, whenever I was with him and I'd hear him answer the phone and he'd say, "Hello, student-to-student, Stu speaking." Like, say that 10 times in a row. It's a nice tongue twister. Anyway, some of you probably work for him and some of you might end up working for him because it's this, like, tutoring empire where he gets uni students to tutor school students, basically. And so if you're looking for a job tutoring, well, he might be able to help you there. But now he's also started teaching this year as a maths teacher at St. Philip's Christian College in Waratah. And another interest, I mean, this sort of combines a lot of his interests. He's interested in society, he's interested in politics. And he's started a Christians in Politics group. And last year they ran a seminar where it got a number of politicians and so on, Christian politicians and groups, to come and speak in Newcastle to anyone who was interested to help inform people on politics and how we might think about it as a Christian and indeed how we might try and make decisions about who we vote for and how we're involved. Now let me ask you, why did you come to uni? Why did you come to uni? Now, there are different motivations. Maybe you came and you picked your degree because you think it's something you'll enjoy. Maybe you came because you want to earn lots of money and uni's a pathway to earn money. Maybe it was just the default option. You know, you finish school, you go to uni, you didn't really think about it. But probably, at least in part, it's this. You came to uni because you want to make a difference in the world. You want your life to count. You want to make an impact. Now, I'm not for a moment suggesting that everyone should go to uni. There are many paths you can follow to prepare yourself for doing something useful with your life, something good and worthwhile, but this is the path you've chosen. You've come to uni because you want to prepare and equip yourself for some useful form of service in our world. So maybe you're studying visual communication design. And you're learning how to make things look beautiful. And if you didn't go to uni, then the world of the future will just be that tiny bit more ugly than if you do go to uni. Or maybe you're studying teaching, education, and you want to help children learn. And if you didn't go to uni, then the next generation will just be that tiny bit more stupid Or maybe you're studying nursing or physiotherapy or medicine and you want to care for people with their physical and mental ailments. And if you didn't go to uni, then the world of the future will just be that tiny bit less healthy. See, it's not simply for your own sake that you go to school, that you do a carpentry apprenticeship, that you study at uni. It's to prepare you for a lifetime of doing something useful for the sake of the world and for the sake of society as a whole. Now, I want you to imagine the end of your life. Actually, I want you to imagine your funeral. And let's assume God's given you, a full span of years, so you've died at age 80 or something like that. But imagine your funeral. And someone stands up to give the eulogy. Maybe it's your husband or your wife. Maybe it's your best friend. Maybe it's your son or daughter. Someone stands up to give the eulogy and they've got 10 or 15 minutes to talk about your life and the impact you've had on this world. What would they say? What would you want them to say? As they look back and consider, how is this world better or worse because you've lived? What would they say? How do you measure a life? How do you measure a life? Well, it's not simple, is it? Right? There's a whole host of complexities as we were to think about the question of how do you evaluate or measure a life. Let me mention just one complexity. Your impact on this world continues beyond the day of your death. See, even after you've gone, you'll have a legacy of sorts, for good or for ill. There might be something you've designed, something you've built, something you've established that continues. There may be people in the world who function better because of how you've treated them. Or maybe they function worse because of how you've treated them. There'll be others you've taught, influenced, and guided at home, at work, in church, in different spheres of life. So actually, maybe your funeral is too soon. I mean, maybe that's too early to assess the impact of your life on this world. How do you actually measure someone's influence on this world? Does that sound like a hard problem? Well, it turns out someone's actually already solved it. A computer scientist named Stephen Skiena. Here he is. Dr. Stephen Skiena, Professor of Computer Science at Stony Brook University. Look, he looks like a computer scientist, doesn't he? Right? I can say because I studied computer science at uni, right? So a computer scientist has solved this problem of how you measure someone's impact on the world. He's written some real page turners. Like he's an author as well. He's written some real page turners, like the Algorithm Design Manual and Computational Discrete Mathematics. And he's also teamed up with someone else, another author, I'll tell you, to write another book, Who's Bigger? Where Historical Figures Really Rank. He has tackled this unbelievably complex problem of evaluating people's impact on the world. And he's done it the same way that you, as uni students, would tackle any complex problem your lecturer gives you, or any difficult assignment, or task, or research question, or essay topic. What would you do? What would you do? Let someone give me an answer. You've got a question, you've got no idea. Complex. What are you going to do? Google? Yep, and which page are you going to click on first? What was that? Wikipedia. Yep, Wikipedia. So that's what he's done. He's teamed up with Google engineer Charles Ward, and just like you use Wikipedia to answer your assignments, he's gone to Wikipedia. You don't really, right? Okay. But I do it too, actually. They've written this book together, Who's Bigger? And he came up with this algorithm that examines English, like the English language Wikipedia, every entry, and compares the different Wikipedia articles and examines them and looks at things like page size and the number of views and the number of times they're edited. And then he introduced some balancing factors to allow for the impact of present but fleeting fame to make sure like someone like Britney Spears doesn't make it into the top 100. And then he's written this algorithm and he applied it to Wikipedia and it spat out a list of the most significant people in history. And here's the top 10. And Skiena says, he says that this list is relatively stable. Like, he expects that in 20 or 30 years' time, if you look at run the algorithm again on Wikipedia, it wouldn't have changed much, if at all. Because you'll notice that top 10 includes no one born later than the 19th century and only one person who lived into the 20th century. It's a list of historical figures. And he's not really making value judgments, like number 7's Adolf Hitler. Like, he's not saying it's necessarily a positive influence, but he's ranking according to the magnitude of their impact on our world. Now, you might question his methodology and all that, but just go with me on this. Focus your attention on the figure at the top of that list, number one. The person who, according to Skiena's algorithm, is the most significant individual in history. Jesus of Nazareth. There's one obvious difference. You may not have occurred to you yet, but there is, if you were to think about it for a while, there's one obvious difference between Jesus and everyone else on that list. And it's this. In the case of Jesus, at the time of his death, at his funeral, no one, could have foreseen that in 2,000 years he would even be remembered, let alone ranked as the most significant person who ever lived. After all, think about it. He was a barely known Galilean from an inconsequential corner of the Roman Empire who had just been brutally executed as a criminal alongside two other criminals. Except for a brief stint in Egypt as an infant, he never ventured more than 200 kilometres from where he was born. If you have been to Tamworth or Port Macquarie or Wollongong or Lithgow, you've travelled further than Jesus. He attained no political office. He had no official religious standing. He left no written work. He sired no children. He never raised an army or fought a war. Compare that with the other 9 people on Skiena's list. See, by the time of their deaths, all of them had made their mark. William Shakespeare had written 37 plays and 154 sonnets. Abraham Lincoln had abolished slavery in America. Alexander the Great had achieved a completely unprecedented military conquest in the span of a few years, overthrowing the Persian Empire and establishing his rule from Greece in the west to India in the east. Each of the other 9 out of that 10 died as someone great, or at least someone influential. But Jesus died in agony and disgrace, and what little following he had that he had gathered was scattered and cowering in fear. Within a few months of Jesus' death, his followers, the apostles, the 12 or 11 Romanian, maybe plus Matthias, the apostles were arrested. They were dragged before the Sanhedrin, the Jewish ruling council, the same council that had condemned Jesus to death. And the council's debating what to do with the apostles. What do we do with them? And one man, a Pharisee named Gamaliel, he stood up and said, "Why should we bother doing anything? Remember, 30 years ago, Judas the Galilean opposed Roman taxation and he gathered a following, but the Romans killed him and his followers were scattered." Well, Jesus is the same. Just wait and see. The movement he began will soon be forgotten. We don't need to do anything. Yet Christianity not only outlasted the Roman Empire, it has grown to the point where today 2.4 billion people, that is a third of the world's population, are Christian, at least in name. Jesus has a legacy that is unmatched. A legacy that has not only withstood the test of time, it has in fact increased as generations have come and gone and centuries have turned into millennia. This term at the Bible Talks, we're going to be exploring that legacy. I've got a slide, I think, about it, Steve. We're going to be exploring Jesus' legacy. Legacy Undimmed, how Jesus changed everything. And we're going to be looking at a particular angle. the impact Jesus had not just on individuals, but on the whole course of history. Jesus' impact on the development of human civilization, especially what we today call Western civilization. See, Jesus has changed how we think. He's changed how we live. He's changed what we value. He's changed our understanding of ourselves and the world at a most fundamental level. In particular, over the next 5 weeks of the Bible talks, we're going to think about how Jesus has changed the way we think about people. The equal dignity of each human being. How Jesus has changed the way we think about leadership, that the leader must be a servant. How he's changed the way we think about government, that rulers must respond to a higher law. How he's changed the way we think about science, that the world is ordered and rationally intelligible. How he's changed the way and how from the very beginning, Jesus has inspired his followers to engage in acts of mercy and compassion that have brought hope and healing and life to the world. Now, all that lies ahead of us. Jesus' legacy, how Jesus changed everything. But tonight, what I want us to consider is a related question. How? Or maybe it's the question, why? Or maybe it's that border zone where how and why overlap. How has this happened? How has Jesus been able to shape history, to change everything? Why has he been so influential? Now, that's a big question, and it has many answers. I want to just give you three, and two I want to mention briefly, and the third I want us to land in, and that's the one I want to leave you with tonight. How could Jesus of Nazareth become the most influential person in the history of the world? Answer one, because he rose from the dead. See, what happened in the 50 or 60 years after Jesus' death on the cross, what happened to Jesus in those 50 or 60 years, what happened amongst his followers in those 50 or 60 years, it only makes sense if Jesus truly did rise from the dead. It makes no sense at all if Jesus' body lay rotting in a Jewish tomb. The courage of Jesus' disciples, transformed from cowering in fear to boldly proclaiming Jesus as risen Lord. Their willingness to die for what they preached. The ineffectiveness of the authorities who tried to crush Christianity. The very shape of Christian doctrine and belief, with belief in Jesus' death and resurrection at its center. The writing of the New Testament, the unified testimony of multiple authors. If Jesus did not rise from the dead, it's very difficult to explain the subsequent course of history. But Jesus' resurrection explains it all. Why is Jesus the most significant person in history? Well, there have been many teachers and spiritual leaders who lived and died. Jesus is the only one who died and lives. How could Jesus become the most influential figure in history? Because he rose from the dead. How could Jesus become the most influential figure in history? Answer two, because he is the sovereign Lord of history. Because this world is not a closed system, it is open to the direction of its creator. Because Jesus reigns, he has all authority in heaven and earth, and his spirit, the spirit of life, is active in our world. And how could Jesus become the most influential figure in history? Answer three, and here's where I want us to land tonight. I want you to be really thinking about this. Jesus changed history because he changes people. Jesus changed history because he changes people. He transforms individuals. He reigns, yes. He has all authority, yes. But this is one of the chief ways that he expresses his rule. This is what the Spirit is doing in our world. Jesus comes to individuals, to you, and he forgives you. He gives you a fresh start. He makes you a new creation. He stitches together the frayed and fragmented pieces of your life and molds and fashions you into an instrument for good in the world. That's how Jesus changes history. I want to show you what I think is one of the most remarkable verses in the Bible. One of the most remarkable verses in the Bible. John chapter 14, verse 12 was what I was to draw your attention to, but we'll start at verse 11. John 14, verses 11 and 12. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father's in me. Otherwise, believe because of the works themselves. Truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and he will do even greater works than these, because I'm going to the Father. Now this is Jesus speaking to his disciples the night that he will be betrayed. It's at the time of the Last Supper. So he's gathered with his most intimate disciples. He's teaching them, he's comforting them, he's instructing them before he goes to his death. And listen again to what he says in verse 12. He says, the one who believes in me will also do the works I do, the works that Jesus does, and he will do even greater works than these. Even greater works than Jesus? So isn't that an extraordinary statement? How could our works possibly be greater than those of Jesus? I mean, we certainly don't perform more impressive miracles than Jesus. Have you raised someone from the dead? We don't teach better parables than Jesus. We don't heal people more powerfully than Jesus. How can our works be greater than those of Jesus? Well, verse 12 gives us a reason why it's even possible. He says, it's because I'm going to the Father. Jesus' ascension, Jesus going to the Father, his ascension to this place in heaven from which he rules over all things, it points to a new situation. Jesus as the risen Lord, and it points to a new mode of Jesus' work in this world. Active through his disciples, through all who believe in him, active through his disciples by the Spirit he gives us. And surely at least one way in which our works are greater than those of Jesus, and they're his words, surely at least one way in which our works are greater than those of Jesus is their extent. Jesus travelled around Palestine. His disciples have spread throughout the world, fulfilling the commission he gave them to go to all nations. Jesus taught his disciples, yes, but he wrote nothing down. His first disciples recorded his teaching, and subsequent generations have translated his words into 3,350 languages. Indeed, Christians have introduced writing to many languages, introducing an alphabet so that they could teach the people to read in their language, so that they could read the Bible. Jesus fed 5,000, his disciples have fed millions. Jesus healed the sick. His disciples invented hospitals. See, that's the secret of how Jesus changed the world. He changes individuals, one at a time, piece by piece, as he puts the broken parts of our lives back together. And he transforms us, and he trains us, and he shapes us to prepare us to do what's good. Now, I've got a couple of further things to say about these greater works which we do as Jesus' disciples, that is, which Jesus does through us. The first thing, additional thing to say is that ultimately their purpose is that people might believe in Jesus. Do you see that in verse 11? If we go back to that. Jesus says in verse 11, his works are so that people would believe in him. Well, if that's the purpose of Jesus' works, then surely that's the purpose of his works that we're doing. Life walked in Jesus' footsteps, learning to do what's good from our Saviour. That's a signpost to Jesus. A signpost to the one who died for us and rose again, to the one who takes away the sin of the world. See, the purpose of good work in our world is not just to mend the world. It's to mend people's relationship with God. It's to point people to Jesus, so that might trust in him. Now, we'll be returning to that theme of faith in Jesus throughout this year. What does it mean to believe in Jesus? But especially at that five-day conference in July, in the middle of the year, in the winter break, called WinterCon, where we'll be looking at the life of faith in a secular age? How can we believe in Jesus in this secular age where so much is arrayed against faith? But that's the first additional thing I want to say about the good works we do. The purpose is that people might believe in Jesus. The second thing I want to say is I want to say something to you personally, especially to those of you who are just starting university. You're coming to uni, I trust, at least in part because you want to make a difference in this world. You want to do something useful with your life. And your uni degree may help you. It's a good and worthwhile thing to do. But if you really want to change the world, the first and most important thing is to let Jesus change you. To let Jesus change you. Matthew 4, verse 19, when Jesus calls disciples, he says, "Come, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men." They have to follow Jesus. The following Jesus comes first, then the being fishers of men. In Mark chapter 3, when he calls his apostles to him, the 12 apostles, it says that the apostles had to be, he appointed them to be with him and that he might send them out. They had to be with Jesus before he could send them to do something useful. And you too must remain with Jesus and stick closely to him before you can do the greater works that he has for you to do. Look at John chapter 15 with me. Passage Bro, you read out. John chapter 15, verse 4. "Remain in me and I in you. Just as a branch is unable to produce fruit by itself unless it remains on the vine, neither can you unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. The one who remains in me and I in him produces much fruit because you can do nothing without me." Do you see that verse 5 contains a promise? The one who remains in me and I in him produces much fruit. There is a promise. You remain in Jesus, you will produce much fruit. You know, your degree increases your chances that you will get a job. And especially a job in the field that you're studying. But I've known people who have come through and got education degrees who haven't been able to get jobs as teachers. I know people in my 12, 13 years here at Newcastle who've studied engineering and haven't been able to get a job as an engineer. I know people who've studied to be designers and they haven't been able to get a job in design. Unable to get work. So it increases your chances, but it's still not guaranteed. But here's a 100% guarantee. You remain in your course, well, you'll probably get a job. You remain in Jesus, you will produce fruit, much fruit. You stick with him. See, if the secret of how Jesus changed the world is that he changes individuals, the secret to being an agent of change in our world is to be someone who is changed by Jesus. And for that to happen, you've got to stick with him. The life of the vine flows into the branches. Stick with Jesus and his life flows into you and through you into the world to bear good fruit. Verse 5b, apart from Jesus, you can do nothing. Apart from him, you can do nothing. Verse 6, next slide, thanks, Steve. Verse 6, if anyone does not remain in me, he's thrown aside like a branch and he withers. They gather them, throw them into the fire and they're burned. See, if we don't stick with Jesus, well, nothing. But if you do remain in Jesus, you will bear fruit. Here is a promise. If you want to make a difference in this world, if you want to leave behind a good legacy, this is actually more important than anything you will learn in your uni degree. Remain in Jesus. See, it could be that actually uni's not for you. Now, you got in, but it turns out it's not for you, and you fail every exam, and you have a couple of cracks at it, and you drop out, and you've got to come up with plan B. But remain in Jesus, and he will produce good fruit in your life. Doesn't matter if that happens. Jesus will do something good in your life. Or it could be that you get a whole transcript full of high distinctions and university medals and academic honours and awards and laudits. But separate yourself from the vine and you've gained nothing. Nothing. Remain in Jesus. My brother-in-law, Dave Myers, he pastors a church in Brisbane called City on a Hill. But for as long as I've known him, from well before he was a pastor, he would sign off every email, every text message, every birthday card with three words. Keep trusting Jesus. Keep trusting Jesus. Because life's a marathon. There are obstacles, there are distractions, there are many. But if you run with Jesus, you will run well. And if you finish with Jesus, you will receive the prize. With Jesus, you have everything. Without Jesus, you have nothing. So keep trusting Jesus. Remain in him. Let me introduce you to someone else. This is Daniel. He studied physics and maths. And it turns out that, like arts, that's not much use for getting a job. So he came back and studied civil engineering. And now he works as an engineer, as a civil engineer, you know, designing and building things. And it's fairly well paid work at being an engineer. So from the money he earns, he gives generously towards the work of the gospel. And he's doing good work, good things with his life, with what God's given him. A couple of years ago, Daniel's father died. Now, I didn't know Daniel's father, I never met him, but I did hear Daniel and others speak about him at his funeral, to speak about the kind of man he was, about his faith, his kindness, the influence that he had on Daniel and his other children. Let me say, the death of his father hit Daniel hard. I mean, you could see it on his face, and not just on the day of the funeral. It hit Daniel hard. But Daniel kept trusting Jesus. You don't know what life's going to throw at you, but remain in Jesus. Stay connected to the vine. Friends, that's why NCS exists. First, I guess we want to introduce uni students to Jesus. See, if you don't know Jesus, I'm speaking to you as if you all do, but I'm sure there are some here who don't. If you don't know Jesus, then please stick around with us. Come and meet the man who changed the world. Get to know him for yourself. Now, this is why NCS exists. We want to introduce students to Jesus, and we want to help students who already do know Jesus to remain in him. You know, you're learning all sorts of things in your degree. You're growing in knowledge. Well, NCS wants to help you also grow in your knowledge of God, to get to know him better. You know, Jesus' original disciples, the 12, the apostles, they spent 3 years following Jesus around, listening to him, learning from him. Well, the 3 or 4 years you have at uni, aim to spend as much time at uni learning about Jesus as you would one of the subjects in your degree. You know, you study 4 subjects a semester? Well, make it 5. You know, maths, physics, engineering, intro to guitar, and Jesus. Your uni degree is preparing you for good work, but NCS will prepare you for good work too, because it'll help you remain in Jesus. And so you will grow and bear fruit, and it'll help you to be involved in God's eternal project, doing Jesus' works, even greater works, so that people might believe in him. It'll help you to be an agent for good in the world. And let me say, I've given you some stories of people who've graduated and what they're doing now, but it actually starts now. It starts on Monday when you turn up for your first lecture. I was chatting to someone earlier who has a lecture 8 a.m. Monday morning. That's the short straw, isn't that right? But it starts now. It starts now. Make it your goal not to be a passive spectator at uni. you know, flitting in and flitting out and observing but never actually being involved. Make it your goal to be an active participant in uni. To relate, to engage, to influence. That can start this week. I want to suggest two projects for you. And here they are. Project number one. This is if you're just starting uni. Project number one. Get yourself along to the Bible talks and an engage group and do it in week one. Get it in your schedule from the start. And commit to, even if you're not sure yet, right? Even if you're trying to work it all out and you're not sure what your timetable looks like, and even if you're not sure, why not commit to the first 5 weeks of Bible talks and engage groups? You probably don't have any assignments due then, nothing major anyway. Commit to the first, commit to the first 5 weeks, give it a try. And find out whether this community of believers, of people who are in our own sort of muddling way, trying to follow Jesus and listen to him and live for him, whether we might be able to help you in that journey too. And you might be able to help us. Get along to the Bible talks, Tuesday at 12, Wednesday at 12, pick one, whichever one you can get. Get along to an engage group, talk to your engage group leader, your faculty leader, and find out when they're on. Put your times in the online form. Get along. Try it out for 5 weeks. I believe NCS will help you keep trusting Jesus. Second challenge is when you go to your first class this week, sit down next to someone you don't know, which I imagine is probably everyone, or just about everyone, unless you met someone here tonight. Sit down next to someone you don't know and say hi. Say good day. See where it leads. Don't treat the people around you as invisible. Now, you might be shy. I'm a bit shy, right? Like, I'm an introvert, right? So, you know, maybe if you're shy, the person you pick to sit next to is someone who looks kind of non-threatening and they're up the back corner or something like that. But whatever it is, right? Sit down next to someone and say hi. Say hello and see where it goes. Engage with your classmates. Now, some won't be interested. That's okay. Just, you know, they'll give you the brush off. Well, okay, move on to someone else, right? Just involve yourselves in what is happening around you at uni, both in terms of NCS and in the Christian activity that can support your faith, and in terms of your classmates. Maybe God has plans to use you as an agent for good in the world, not just when you graduate, but right here now at university, impacting the lives of those around you. So get to know some of them. So I'm going to sit down a moment. I've got a few discussion questions that are going to come up for you to chat about at your tables. There are four questions. I suggest you probably just pick two of them and talk about it. So you're going to have a look at those in a moment. I'm going to pray before we do that, though. I'm really glad you're here tonight, and I hope that over the weeks to come that I get to meet every one of you, and that after a few attempts, I eventually remember your name, and you give me enough grace that I have a few attempts, because I'll probably fail a couple of times, but I'll get there in the end, and I look forward to, I hope, over the next 3 or 4 years of getting to know you and being able to walk alongside you, working together with you for your faith and for Jesus. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for sending your Son Jesus Christ into the world, for his teaching, his deeds, his example, his death, his resurrection. And we thank you that everything Jesus did in those few years so long ago in what seemed an insignificant part of the world, but we thank you that everything Jesus did has left an indelible imprint on our world, and it has changed society, it has changed the world, it has changed civilization for the better. And we thank you that Jesus is still changing people today. And I do want to pray now for everyone who is coming to uni as a believer in Christ, everyone here in this room, that whatever challenges and hurdles and temptations and trials the next 3 or 4 or 5 or how many years might bring, whatever they might bring, you would hold on to them. You would enable them to keep trusting in Jesus, to remain in him. And indeed, you will grow them and change them and work in them, prepare them for good work in this world you've made.
please do use us as your agents of change in this world. And we ask it for Jesus' sake. Amen.